to the FTN NBA Podcast with your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer, Joe Metz, and Zach Graham.
Presented by the FTN Network.
Bringing you the analysis you need on breaking news, betting markets, and your fantasy lineups.
What is going on, everybody? Tuesday, March 29th. You may be listening on Wednesday, March 30th. This is the FTN NBA Podcast, I believe, episode 34? If it is 34, that's a pretty special episode. I am your host, Joe Metz, joined as always by my good friend and co-host, Zach Graham, a.k.a. Kweisenberg. Zach, we're approaching the end of the regular season. I think each team has like 7-8 games left. How you doing?
Doing well, man. Under the 3-week mark, I think, in terms of what's left in the regular season. And I guess like we won't totally steal, like we won't do this going forward. We won't totally steal the Bill Burr, Paul Verzi, Anything Better podcast tradition where they match up the episode number to like famous sports jersey numbers. But 34, like, since we're here. Obviously, anybody listening knows where you're going with that, but also Shaq, Hakeem.
Shaq. I actually have three that come to mind, not just Giannis, because before Giannis, it was Ray Allen for the Bucks,
who was there.
And
Paul Pierce,
yes. And someone completely unrelated to Milwaukee Bucks basketball, Devin Harris, old point guard for the Nets. I went to the same high school as Devin Harris, so nice. I have a bit of a sense of loyalty to Devin Harris. That was the original reason for my JMets 34 on Twitter, not Giannis.
It was
Devin Harris. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So look at the fun facts that we're just pulling out of the jersey game.
He had an all-star year, I believe, with Dallas, I think, or was it with New Jersey at the time? I think it might have been with New Jersey that he was an all-star.
Was he really an all-star? The only thing I remember from Devin Harris is
was it his game winner from like half court?
Yes, the half court, game winner. So Devin Harris.
He was 39
years old now.
2009 all-star.
Oh my god!
So he was on the team. I mean, wow! We're getting off the beaten path first, but this is fun. Like, he was on the Eastern Conference all-star team when he was on New Jersey. Shared a bench with Mo Williams of the Cavs. Who had his best years with the Milwaukee Bucks, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
Danny Granger, Rashard Lewis, Jameer Nelson. Man, that's a pretty brutal all-star bench when you look at it.
All-star bench. Yeah, see, I'm looking at that Nets team. Vince Carter, rookie Brooke Lopez, I believe. Yep. Keon Dooling. Yi Janlian.
That strikes a chord with me.
I mean, having Yi and Brooke Lopez on the same team is just – I mean, that may be the most 2008 thing that I've heard this month.
That duo played off the court would be an understatement in today's NBA. That would be a mismatch. You know,
Brooke's NBA champion last year, so he's not a dinosaur yet.
That's fair. And I guess – Yi helped pave the path for the 2022 NBA champions.
Exactly.
But we're here today. You know, like you said, we have, 2-3 weeks left of the regular season before we hit the play-ins, I believe, on April 14th or something like that. Kind of just threw that date out of my ass. So
it might be around the last day of the season?
Yeah.
I believe it is the 10th. It's a 10th. Sunday this year, which is interesting. I don't think that's ever happened before that I can remember. Typically, the season will end on a Wednesday, and then that Saturday
would be the playoffs or play-in. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
The Saturday I think was the beginning of the first round. That was the first day of the playoffs. Obviously, we only have one season, right, of play-in games. Yeah. So I guess ending the season on a Sunday now makes sense. There's no NFL, obviously. And then you have the week to run the play-in games and still have rest for those teams going into their first series, the teams that make it through that. So I guess we should expect to see this type of regular season finale moving forward on a Sunday, which, those who have played DFS for multiple years know how absolutely ridiculous. Mid-March to the end of the regular season, but that last day, especially like right now, because the NBA does the NFL thing where every game right now is TBD in terms of the start time.
I was just going to say that. It's probably, I'd say, from probably noon Eastern time to 10:30.
It's going to be all day. It's going to be fucking brutal for DFS, but good thing we're not here to talk about DFS. We're just here to talk about hoops.
Thank God. And I'm sure the sites will offer a 15-game slate, which sounds like a nightmare, in my opinion, one I will likely fade. But, yeah, we are here talking about hoops and kind of in a similar vein as we approach the end of the season, just how razor-thin the margin right now in the top half of the Eastern Conference is, how the play-in is starting to shake up a little bit in the West, and how they're – top four seeds in the East, razor-thin margin of one game separation between all four combined. But then, like, 5 through 7, which is, 5 and 6 in the playoffs, 7 in the play-in, that's a one-game separation. And then Brooklyn is only 3 games back of Cleveland. Charlotte and Atlanta are all within a game of Brooklyn. So there's a lot that can change. Very limited time, but we've seen how crazy the NBA can get. Miami Heat leading the conference, 48-28, one game up of the Bucks, Sixers, and Celtics. So before we hop into seeding, the Heat have kind of been in the center of attention over the last 7 or 10 days, 4 and 6 over the last 10 games, playing some pretty disappointing basketball, and things seemed to boil over late last week during a timeout when Eric Spoelstra, Jimmy Butler, and Udonis Haslem got into it. You can do all the lip reading you want. It looks like it was Spo and Haslem against Jimmy. The thing that stuck out to me the most is, as a supposed leader on a team, I think the last person in the world you want to test and call out is of the Miami Heat would be Udonis Haslem, someone who's been there for almost 20 years. I would think he's one of the most highly regarded veterans in the league, probably one of the best locker room presences. He like embodies what they call Heat culture. Jimmy Butler's kind of right now the antithesis of Heat culture. So what's your take on this whole Jimmy Butler scenario?
I mean, I think it's ultimately it's just like more of the same from Jimmy.
Yep.
But I think the more this happens in his career, and we've discussed many times on this pod
how
we think that the peak has already happened for Jimmy Butler, I think, in terms of his NBA powers, right? Like especially to will a team like he did to the finals a few years back in the bubble. I think that's probably apex Jimmy Butler there.
Sure.
And we know the contract that he's on. But looking back, whether it's Chicago, Minnesota, Philadelphia, he's done one thing or another to make it known that he doesn't want to be there anymore, or just, I guess, have his teammates. And it's not all of them, obviously. Like it seems like specifically in Philly, like Joel Embiid loved Jimmy Butler and still loves Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
But then you look at Minnesota and it's a completely different story. I don't think Andrew Wiggins or Carl Anthony Towns are getting Jimmy up to play cards on the weekend, right? So when you're looking at all the different angles and clips of this altercation on the bench, and again, this is like, obviously it's not the same thing because the orchestration that the way that Jimmy orchestrated his exit from Minnesota is completely different from this. And he's not trying to leave Miami right now.
Yeah.
But I think we kind of got a glimpse into the way that he acts to his teammates, to his coaches when he's frustrated.
Yep.
Part of that, I understand. Player, coach, no matter what, especially when you're on a good team that's extremely competitive, that has a bunch of great players like the Heat do, whether or not they're in their prime now, a lot of the guys on that team had their moments in the league. A lot of them are former champions, etc., all-stars,
yeah,
and the like. So I think some of it is the team was struggling that night. I don't think that's the majority of it, but I understood, like, I've been in plenty of heated conversations.
Yeah.
When I was a player to one of my teammates, to one of my coaches, as a coach to one of my players, to another one of my fellow coaches, certainly to the officials. You know, those things happen. So,
yeah,
getting into an argument with your coach, with your teammate on the bench is, to me, not a huge issue. We've seen it even recently. Like, I think the most famous example is KD and Draymond, right? And yeah, and that led to, ultimately, Kevin Durant leaving the Warriors. But they still, I mean, the things that they did together, like, that argument did not put up some sort of barrier where that team couldn't overcome it. So yeah, I don't think this is like, I don't think we're witnessing this team crumble in terms of their chemistry, in terms of, But I have also never seen, and I wasn't old enough to be watching Latrell Sprewell choke out PJ Carlissimo back in the day. You know, I was still, I was not watching basketball yet. Or at least, you know, I didn't have league pass. I wasn't tuned into that one. But this is like the things that those guys said to each other that we could hear, right? I've never seen a coach get that animated at a player in public. In the
NBA. this is like one of the most highly regarded coaches in basketball, in sports.
Certainly by people who know what they're talking about, at least in my opinion. I've always thought very highly of Spoelstra.
Yep.
Same. Of course, for what he did as one of the youngest coaches in the league at the time that the Big Three in Miami happened, and LeBron James literally bumping into him on the court when things weren't going well. Like, and that's a whole nother discussion. But Spo has been through everything. Everything as an NBA coach, all the way from his days as a video coordinator, working his way up to, again, one of the youngest head coaches in the league at the time he got the job. And he's been extremely successful, in my opinion, with or without LeBron James. I think he's a very, very good
coach. I agree. Yeah.
So for him to get that worked up, Jimmy Butler had to say some shit. Because like, you think about all the things that are said in an NBA huddle, whether you're joking, whether you're in the heat of the moment, what, like, there are a lot of things said in a basketball team, in a locker room, that in your normal day-to-day conversation or your work, your normal workplace, don't fly. But that's just the standard, and not just in basketball, I think, around sports, right? And that's a bigger conversation around that. But then UD, Udonis Haslem, coming in and saying, I'll beat your ass. Like, we almost had a all-star player, potential Hall of Famer down the road. I don't know if Jimmy, but I don't think he's probably.
I don't think he's going to make an all-star.
But, like, he's somebody that, like,
he's supposed to be the leader of this team.
Certainly, like, a Heat fan like our buddy Javi would probably make a Hall of Fame argument for him, right? And we would probably push back on it, but that's not insane. That's not insane, especially with some of the people that have gotten in the Hall of Fame. But just trying to illustrate the gravity of this interaction between great coach and great player. And then Udonis Haslem, franchise legend.
He's a staple of Miami Heat history. Like, absolutely. He really is. That's the best way to put it.
Multiple-time champion. I would assume he's going to go into coaching because technically – that's already what he is. He's just wearing a jersey. Yeah, but the fact that these guys were so amped up and willing to say the things they did, to go at each other like they did, like, obviously people got in between, they're being held back, but like, UD was certainly not posturing there. He absolutely would have fought Jimmy Butler, and that's why I want to know what the fuck he said. Because Jimmy Butler, you know, is in the top probably 5% of the league in terms of guys who say wild shit, whether they're in an interview, in the locker room, on the court, to their teammates, obviously now that we know, to their coach, to opposing players. What could he have possibly have said that crossed the line that he set for himself?
Right.
I just, I'm, I hope I don't know. Someday, and like, we get that answer. And ultimately, yeah, now after this long-winded, just me, this diatribe about this interaction, clearly I was very interested. I was, I love watching stuff like this, the body language. If you can pick up on things that are said, who's getting in between who and who doesn't give a shit. Like all these type of things are, I love watching on film. So I know this was mostly last week and it's probably old news for most people, but like, this is the first chance we've had to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I was thoroughly entertained by trying to break that scenario down. And I hope more stuff in the future, it's probably years down the road, but I hope we get more of a light shined on what actually happened there, and were there things leading up to it before that game, or was it really just the frustration in the game, right? And I think because the team, like obviously the lead had slipped a little bit in terms of being in first place in the East, but it's just like that's such an out of place occurrence in the NBA for that to happen in a team and a good team and yep, amongst guys with big names like that. And it's just I think there's some, like, it's just wild how something like that is brushed aside in 36 hours.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think, you know, you mentioned the lip reading of Udonis Haslem saying like, I'll beat your ass. If you watch back and look at Spo in particular, he says to Jimmy like, Do you want me to beat your ass? Like he's questioning, like Jimmy's like challenging him. Mm-hmm. It just seems like a really odd approach and an odd dynamic.
Yeah. He said, what do you want me to fight you? Right. That's what he said.
That's what it was. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Like, so Jimmy's clearly provoking, mm-hmm, but like, why are you provoking your head coach? Like saying you're like going to fight him and instigate, like, what are you doing? That's not productive. That's not like constructive conflict, which I think there is a line where you can get fiery as a teammate and in turn reflects positively on the court and mm-hmm, it comes across constructive. I don't think this was that. It was stemmed obviously from some type of frustration. We don't know what it's from. But to your point, like, this is not the first time we've seen Jimmy Butler do something like this. Won't be the last. I have the mantra that there are a lot of fake tough guys in the NBA, and I think Jimmy Butler is one of them. The amount of times I've seen Jimmy Butler threaten to fight someone, run up on someone, say something to presser, compared to the amount of times he's actually gotten a dust up with someone, is any number compared to zero. Like, there's videos of to be honest, 99% of NBA players are fake tough guys. Like, we both know this. The NBA is like, it's like Hollywood. But, like, there's the old video of, like, Jimmy Butler running up on Paul Pierce, and Paul Pierce turns around and Jimmy Butler pretends like, oh, I'm going to keep walking the other way. It's like, dude, like, it feels like a long running shtick similar to Pat Beverly at this point, who Pat Beverly has really made me eat my own foot this year because he's been phenomenal for Minnesota. I think Pat Beverly would be more about it than Jimmy Butler would, though. I just, like, well, for someone like Jimmy Butler who says, you know, he embraces heat culture, all this stuff, like, or embodies it, this just is not that. Like, heat culture is not just like overt aggression towards anybody.
The dude who embodies heat culture was the one who was trying to fight you, Jimmy.
Heat culture.
He is the baseline for it. He is heat culture. And let's also not forget, before we move on, let's not forget that there was a pretty big dust up involving the Heat early in the season, and Jimmy Butler started chirping when he was 90 feet away from the action.
When he was in the tunnel. Correct.
Yeah. He was sitting on his own bench at first, yelling down to the other bench after he was 4 feet away from Nikola Jokic in that instance. And so, just to your point, yeah, I think there is a certain amount of posturing and just building up his persona. I have no doubt that Jimmy Butler would throw down if it came to that.
Yeah, he would beat my ass. That's what I mean.
Of course.
Question about that.
But I just, I was really intrigued by that interaction. And I just think it can be dissected more, and clearly that's what I've done a little bit here.
Yeah, and I agree. I don't think there's chemistry issues with this Heat team. I actually think chemistry-wise, this team is probably one of the most sound teams in the NBA. Mm-hmm. But like, there are, I think we're just seeing a few leaks in the barrier for the Heat right now as we're getting down to the wire. So like I said, the Heat lead all three of the Bucks, the Sixers and the Celtics by one game total.
Bucks and Sixers playing right now as we record.
Bucks and Sixers playing right now. Heat, Sixers, and Bucks all tied in the loss column. Boston one game behind in the loss column. The Heat are two wins up on Philly and Milwaukee, one win up on the Celtics. So looking at those top four seeds right now, who do you think – I mean, I'm not going to say who do you think is the realest contender, because I think the answer is very clear. It's the Bucks. I mean, like bias aside, the reigning champion, like I think they've – and they've also been playing very well lately. I think they proved last year that you flash back to 2018-19 when they ran through the regular season. The year prior to COVID, they're beating teams 25-30 every night. They're beating contenders by this much every night. And, you know, they fizzle out. They don't fizzle out in the Eastern Conference Finals, but they lost. You know, they similar to what Utah was 2 years ago or Phoenix even last year, like you expect, like, okay, there is no stopping this team, and they were stopped. I think they kind of have started to show over the last year and a half, 2 years, that they don't put as much emphasis on the regular season. They're okay resting guys when they want, because all that matters is once they get to the playoffs, they want to have the health and the confidence to get them to the top. So I don't think right now that they really care that much about getting the one seed. Obviously, ideally, sure. But seeding is very, very going to be very important in the East more than ever this year. Who of these four do you think wants the one seed the most? Because one seed's going to play the winner of right now. Right now, it would be the winner of Charlotte and Atlanta in the play-in. But that's obviously subject to change.
Not necessarily. Because the play-in is 7-8, winner gets the 7.
Loser plays the winner. Correct. Sorry. So whoever wins between Charlotte and Atlanta would then – so they play the winner – they either play Charlotte or Atlanta versus whoever wins the 7-8 between right now, Cleveland and Brooklyn.
So
– or the loser.
And this – I guess we can kind of pull this into the Eastern Conference as a whole at this point, since
it is
very important with Brooklyn lurking down there and pretty much locked into a play-in spot at this point. They would have to make up four games on either Toronto or Chicago and still pass Cleveland. I think Cleveland, they may pass Cleveland and host that 7-8 play-in game, that being the Nets. But I don't think with seven games remaining, including the one they're playing right now against Detroit, which, by the way, Brooklyn is down at the half to Detroit in Brooklyn. Certainly, if they drop this game tonight, I think that locks them in to the play-in game. If they aren't already, you know, four games back of the six with seven to go, including tonight. But with the injuries sustained by Evan Mobley last night, Jarrett Allen still out, obviously the myriad of injuries that Adams Cavs have sustained this year, I think the seed that those top four want to avoid now becomes the two. Because if Cleveland doesn't have their bigs or are otherwise not at 100%, I just don't think they have what it takes to beat Brooklyn in a winner-take-all game.
I agree.
If Kyrie and KD can play. And obviously right now, obviously the –
they can now. Like
the
now
special exemption in New York, which, if we're being honest – is more about baseball than Kyrie Irving, because it there's a lot more unvaccinated Yankees and Nets than there are Nets.
It's multiple versus one. And the thing is, one of them is Aaron Judge. So you do the math.
Who is a million times more important to the city of New York than Kyrie will ever be. Because nobody gives a shit about the Nets except for Stefano. But
it's fair. I've never met another Nets fan.
With those four up top, in looking at the schedules, obviously, whoever wins Philly-Milwaukee tonight is going to have a leg up on the other. Coming down the stretch here, both of those teams with seven games to go after tonight. Looking at the rest of the schedules, I actually think Miami has the best chance to hold on to that one seed. Because you look at the remaining games, they've got six left, eight each, including tonight for Philly and Milwaukee, six left for Boston. Five of Miami's games are against teams that are over 500, but like when I look at them, Boston tomorrow night or Wednesday, if people are listening here on Wednesday, depleted Boston, right? No Time Lord. They'll get the rest of those guys back who sat. Right.
Yeah.
But no Time Lord is
that's a huge. It's a huge loss.
It's an incredible disservice to basketball fans that that happened, because that team has not been seen enough by your average fan.
Yep.
And they've been playing the best basketball of anybody, with the possible exception of Phoenix, but Phoenix has had guys in and out of the lineup the last couple of months.
Since the margin is very wide, too. It's a very wide margin of how good they've been.
But, and I still think they're going to be a good team, depending on their matchup. They could certainly still win a round, and Time Lord could be back by the end of the first round if it goes six or seven, or the second round if his recovery goes right. But now you've kind of lost that depth, that versatility that you had, having kind of the two defensive-minded bigs in Horford and Time Lord, and the two defensive-minded guards in Marcus Smart and Derek White. And obviously, Jason Tatum has really upped his game on the defensive end of the floor.
And Jaylen Brown, a very good defender.
Jaylen Brown has always been an above-average defender.
But yes, his progression has been insane.
Maybe not when Jaylen first came into the league, but that's he's always
normal
been
there. Yes, correct.
But the fact that now your best five is somewhat forced to be Smart, White, the Jays, and Horford, instead of having that sixth guy and having the positional, the size, versatility with those six guys. I just think that they are in jeopardy, and this is certainly not a hot take. They are in jeopardy of now losing in the first round, almost to whoever I think they play. Still a very, very good team. And again, those five guys are going to be a great five, and you play your guys a lot more minutes. You're not going to see 20 minutes of Aaron Nesmith. You're not going to see 18 minutes of Peyton Pritchard, right? Like, your best guys play a shitload of minutes in the playoffs.
You'll run a 7-8-man rotation, exactly.
It's not as dire as some people I think are saying, but I think this Celtics team had a legit shot at winning the East if they stayed healthy and continued to play like they did. You can't really argue against it, because nobody can fucking stop them right now.
Yep.
It just seems like maybe the injury bug is going to be the thing that does it. So all that to say this, I think the Heat do get that win at Boston tomorrow night. Then they play Chicago, Toronto, Charlotte, Atlanta, all teams battling for seeding. But I think all teams that have a leg up, or all teams that the Heat rather have a leg up on, and then they close out at Orlando. Relatively tougher schedules for some of these other teams. Philly, I'll take that back. Give me Philadelphia in the number one seed. I hadn't quite seen the last four games on their schedule, but if they get the win tonight,
in Indy twice,
which is Spurs-esque in terms of their schedule. You know, getting three Blazers meetings and two Pelicans and whatever.
And somehow San Antonio has the fifth hardest schedule left.
Do they really?
Oh, yeah.
By win percentage or whatever?
Yeah, by win. What? It's by win percentage. Well,
we'll talk Western twice. Conference in a second. Yeah. Can't help to talk about the Spurs when I can. So two matchups with Detroit still. For Philly, two with Indiana. Charlotte, that should be a win. Embiid could maybe beat him by himself and with a hand tied behind his back. Although I'll give Charlotte and James Borrego credit. They have been playing better. I think it's going to be Philly. So let's make a prediction just for fun here. Your top four in the East when all is said and done in 19 days. Mine would be Philly, Miami, Milwaukee, Boston.
Philly, Miami, Milwaukee, Boston. I think I align identically.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we are recording. It is the fourth quarter of the Bucks-Sixers game.
Cut it to four.
Are down four. I think if the Bucks win this game, they have to win this game. And then from there, I think the Bucks can very handedly beat Boston without Robert Williams, because they have no rim protection for Giannis. Then they play Cleveland and Chicago, two teams they can handle. Detroit, Clippers. Like, I think the Bucks. I think whoever wins this game between the Sixers and the Bucks will get the one seed. I think if the Bucks lose, they'll get the three. If the Sixers lose, they get the two. The loser of this game with the three, the winner will get the one. Miami, I think we'll get the two, Boston with the four. Yes.
Okay.
Yep. That's what I think. This is a very, very pivotal game. Now it's a 2-point game. Now,
making moves.
So let's dive a little further down the standings to a team that's absolutely free falling, and it's the Chicago Bulls, who, you know, as of late last week, were 0-16 against teams in that were top three seeds in either conference. When you look at their remaining schedule, they have the third hardest remaining schedule based on record opponent win percentage of 552. They play the Heat, the Bucks, the Celtics, the Timberwolves, the Hornets. Then their easiest opponents, Washington will give them that. They're playing Washington right now. They're only up by, I think, two possessions. And the Clippers, who I don't necessarily – like, when you think of easy opponents, even without Paul George, that's not an easy – they've been treading water. They've been a commendable team this season. They're not an easy opponent like Indiana or Portland or Houston.
And they were above 500 like 2 weeks ago.
Correct.
And the now Clippers, as of, that is. They're 2-8 in their last 10 now. They've been sliding a little bit. But
correct. But as of, you know, Tuesday, March 29th, Paul George returning against Utah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when they play Chicago, but assuming it's not a back-to-back, they will likely see Paul George. And by then, we'll be playing Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have a game Friday, the Clippers, nope. You know?
Let me check the Clips. I know the Bulls do not. The Clips play tonight, Utah. That's tough. At Chicago Thursday, at Milwaukee Friday.
Ooh. So
you would have to think that Paul George, maybe a couple other guys, sit one end of that. And I think the thing to do is sit him against Milwaukee.
Yes, because that's the less winnable game.
Yes.
Yes, I 100% agree. So I think Chicago's in trouble. I think if it wasn't, and I think, you know, you and I were actually texting about this morning.
Mm-hmm.
We had an FTM bet sub ping me and say, hey, like, the Bulls are plus 400 to finish below the sixth seed right now. Am I missing something? I think the only thing working in their favor is the hits that Cleveland keeps taking from an injury standpoint. You were the one that pointed out, I think it's a very strong point, because their schedule is very tough. They're in an absolute free fall. They cannot beat a contending team. The only thing stopping them is themselves right now, and they keep getting in their own way. Toronto, 8-2 in their last 10. They're playing very sound basketball. If those two play in a 7-game series, I would take Toronto over Chicago without hesitation. If Cleveland didn't lose Evan Mobley, I think that would be a smash bet to have the Bulls finish in the 7th seed.
I agree. Just based on the big odds that you were getting there.
Correct.
But after last night, after Mobley went it's down, hard. Which, I mean, hopefully it's not like, I think the kind of basketball world was holding their breath that was not a catastrophic
season-ending
injury for Evan Mobley. And it appears that he avoided that. But, oh my goodness, 32, 10, and 10 for Luka tonight in 24 minutes. Halfway through the third, the Mavericks have 101 points on the Lakers, who will get
to. I need one more PRA from Russell Westbrook, and I'm turning this game off. So
there you go. but yeah, man, like, to your point, you said it. It's going to be really hard, I think, for the Bulls to drop into the play-in game because of those Cleveland injuries. It would take a lot. I think they could get close, but it would be a catastrophic collapse to drop into that seventh spot with the guys that Cleveland is going to have.
To be fair, I don't know if it would as much be a catastrophic collapse on the Bulls' part more than it would be a remarkable job at treading water by the Cavs.
Yeah, maybe.
Because the way the Bulls are playing, it wouldn't be super surprising to see them keep losing games.
Sure.
But it's obviously – I think their fate is as much in Cleveland's hands right now as it is their own. So sure. I guess we're talking about two teams right now in the 5 and the 7. Toronto, right between these two teams right now, playing very sound basketball all season, really. Do we think they kind of remain steady the rest of the season? What's your outlook on Toronto as we approach the play-in?
Yeah, I think they absolutely have it going where they're not. I I would be extremely surprised to see them drop into the play-in, especially with the team, you know, the Bulls, the Cavs sandwiching them in there at the six. I also think there's somebody that certain teams, and maybe all those top four, would maybe try to position themselves to avoid seeing the Raptors in the first round.
Yes.
The currently 3-6 Bucks Raptors, you know the season series?
What is it, 2-2?
3-0 Raptors.
Ooh.
Which, I mean, I have not, you know, we have not done the deep dive into those box scores. Yeah, maybe Giannis wasn't playing or something. Yeah. But
what?
It's not great on the surface.
No, but I will say, I'm pretty sure it was 2-0 or either 2. Was it 2-0 Phoenix last year for the against the Bucks? Uh-huh. The Bucks got destroyed by the Suns in the regular season.
Yeah, well, and it was 2-0 to start the series too. And then when you have the best player and you get seven cracks at it, usually the best player comes out on top. But yeah, I think that Toronto is. I mean, shit, man. You remember this time last year when we were talking about Raptors need to tank, blow it up, and like,
and the thing is, by all.
They kind of did the intents and purposes.
We thought, by all intents and purposes, like early in the offseason, we're like, okay, they're taking. Like, yep. You know, we Siakam, above average, very good player. Fred VanVleet, first time All Star, very good player.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a guy that's going to win you a championship. They don't have a superstar. Mm-hmm. Drafted Scottie Barnes, who kind of surprised everyone. Thought they were going to take Jalen Suggs. We thought they were going to take Jalen Suggs and rebuild it with the backcourt. This has to be the most impressive rebuild I think I've ever seen in sports. They are dangerous.
Masai Ujiri does not miss.
Masai is a wizard. So it's kind of funny to think about Toronto too, because you have to then look at Brooklyn, right?
Mm-hmm.
If somehow Cleveland outplays Toronto by at least a game, and you know, I've not looked at the season series between Cleveland and Toronto to see who has the tiebreaker.
Mm-hmm.
But if either hypothetically say Cleveland outplays Toronto by a game and they have a tiebreaker, or outplays them by more than a game and jumps them, or Toronto outplays
Cleveland 3-1.
It's Cleveland 3-1. Okay. Yep. So then I'm going to scratch the latter hypothetical. If Cleveland outplays Toronto by a game,
mm-hmm.
Brooklyn treads water and sticks in that 7-8 play-in.
Mm-hmm.
Kyrie can't play in that mm-hmm. game because it's mm-hmm. in Toronto.
So, I mean, that's the nightmare scenario for Brooklyn at this point, right? Is being in that spot. But I think we also have to pump the brakes on like five alarm fire here, because
I agree.
Even if they go up to Toronto, a team with KD healthy is certainly not out of any good.
Ever.
And
I mean, we saw it last year in the second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs.
But they're also the 8 seed, so even if they go north and lose, they come back home for the next game, and then they will most likely end up the 8. So I'm not worried at all.
And then Miami, if they're the one, is getting dusted in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, whoever has to run into Brooklyn, whether they're the 7 or the 8, is just, I mean, it's almost like the just big dick kick that the Suns are going to get when the Clippers bring back PG and Kawhi and the Clippers are the 8 seed. Which I guess, like, unless you have anything else here on the East, we could move into the West here in terms of the seeding.
Bucks battles. Up 5 right now.
What a turnaround here.
I mean, okay. I mean, so like quick, like a 30 second bit.
Hey, do it, man.
I have not, like, Giannis, obviously Giannis, the best basketball player in the world right now, great in the fourth quarter. But the progression of Drew Holiday's offensive game in the fourth quarter of this season, like, if you look, I need to find a way to pull these splits, but I want to look over like the last 6 weeks. Drew Holiday's fourth quarter production has been like ungodly. It's unbelievable. And he's developed these new step back jumpers that people cannot defend. It looks super sloppy, but it works out. It's nuts, and they're up 5 with 5 minutes left. While we're talking about the West, I'm also going to be looking at this Drew Holiday split, if I can find it. So let's dive into the West. One seed, not even question, locked up, like 8.5 game lead on Memphis, who has a 5.5 game lead in the 2 seed. That's all but locked up. barring an epic collapse by Memphis, who is 9-1 over the last 10. I think they're now 16-2 without John Morant. Golden State, game and a half up on Dallas in the three. They will be a game up on Dallas after Tuesday's slate, barring a miraculous comeback.
Yeah, that ain't happening.
Lakers, that ain't happening. No. Yeah. So let's skip right to it. So Denver in the six has a 2.5-2 game lead over Minnesota. I don't think Minnesota is going to catch Denver. I don't. Could they? Sure. But let's talk about eight. Now, it's really honestly 9, 10, 11 because there's a 6.5 game jump.
It's like 3 through 6 and 9 through 11 is where the fun is going to happen here.
So let's start with 3 through 6 then we can progress to your favorite topic, the Spurs chase for the play-in.
Oh, God. I wish we were not talking about that, but we'll get there. This is the more important thing ultimately here is 3 through 6. Like you said, T-Wolves 2 games back of the Nuggets for that sixth spot, but then Denver at 6 and Golden State at 3, sandwiching Mavs at 4, Jazz at 5. Those teams separated by 3 games with 6 to go for, I believe, each of them. Obviously, the Mavericks playing right now. The Jazz play later on tonight against the Clippers. Golden State, obviously, like it's an understatement to say that they're in trouble in terms of their seeding. Obviously, they've been slipping and sliding down from contending the first third of the season for best record in the league with the Suns to, wow, maybe the Grizzlies can catch them to, holy shit, the Grizzlies have a 5-game lead.
Correct.
And John Morant hasn't played for 10 days, and he won't play again for another week. So,
and they have nothing to be worried about. Absolutely nothing.
I'm more concerned just about how tough the road is going to be for the Warriors.
Okay.
I'm more concerned about that than them like pulling it together and starting to look like the Warriors again. I don't think we're getting even 95% Klay Thompson this year. I just don't think it's going to happen. He hasn't he's shown like 2 games where it's like, okay, Klay is shooting and scoring the ball at a rate that we know is above average for him, right? He just hasn't shown that upside with any sort of consistency. Steph Curry having any sort of foot ankle issue that plagued him throughout the first 5-6 years of his career, like to the detriment of
people forget how impactful that was.
The Warriors may have ascended in the Western Conference quicker than they did if his ankles were not tissue paper at the beginning of his career. And I say that you take that with a grain of salt because the Spurs were still fucking dominant in those years. The Warriors were one of the teams that gave them some scares on their back-to-back finals runs in 13 and 14. Again, sneaking in a Spurs reference where I can. Draymond being back, we just won't know until we see those three guys out there together. I think that when you get Steph Curry, you get Klay Thompson, you get Draymond Green on a basketball court together, they're going to be pretty fucking good. And I think the Warriors have not only a good chance to make the conference finals, but I still think they have a chance to make it out of the West because if they stay in the 2 or 3, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago on the pod, it's extremely important to get, in my opinion, for the Warriors, for the Mavericks, for the Jazz, for the Nuggets, the teams that are still in contention for that three, to fight tooth and nail until the end, to get on the opposite side of the bracket from the Suns. You do not want to see the Suns before you have to. That's just the reality of the situation.
That's any team in the West right now, but some teams obviously just won't have that ability right now.
Exactly. So it's like, it's interesting because if you're the 4 or the 5, you're on Phoenix's side. If you're in the 6, you're safe. But then you're likely going to take on Golden State or you're going to see Luka in the first round. You can't really avoid that. So I think the 3 or the 6 is the place you want to be here in terms of avoiding Phoenix. But if you are maybe dropping a game, sitting a couple guys, whatever, to try to stay in the 6, which I don't think any of these teams are really taking their seeding all that seriously. They just don't want to play in the play-in game. But I'm just thinking about, hey, if we're trying to position for the six, we can't lose enough where maybe the Timberwolves are now threatening to take over the six from us. So, again, I just think that pod of four teams, Warriors, Mavs, Jazz, Nuggets, is extremely interesting to watch. And more interesting to watch, unless you're somebody who just likes watching tragedy and car wrecks and explosions. And then the play-in game chase in the West is for you, because you can continue to watch the Lakers crumble and try to pull themselves to a 10 seed here, because the fucking 9 seed, man, is not happening. It's not happening. They're a game, they're a half game back of the 9 right now, and I think that's the closest they get the rest of the year. Obviously, they're going to lose tonight to the Mavericks, so they'll be a game back of the Pelicans. But you mentioned that spread, and I guess now we've officially transitioned into the 9-10-11 talk here. So let's pull up that Spurs schedule that apparently
you said right is in front of me. Fifth toughest. So the fifth hardest in terms, this is in terms of win percentage, 546. Mm-hmm. So they have Portland twice, but and they also just played Houston yesterday. Yes. So they have Portland twice.
Oh man, that shot. I cannot believe that game didn't get tied at the buzzer. I was about, I know. I was so, man, it's not good for my health to be cheering against my favorite team. Like, out of, dude, Spurs, Steelers, Austin FC, Penguins, Rangers. I would throw all those teams out the window for the Spurs. To be cheering against them 82 times this year has taken a toll on my heart. So I'm hoping that next year we can be battling for like a six seed. And I can be cheering for that instead of wanting all these losses, because having to cheer for that Houston team last night just does damage to my soul.
Yeah.
But to your point, Houston last night, game, so they have two Portland games.
Portland two just cakewalks.
Yes.
But then they have, this is very good for you, Memphis.
Yep.
Golden State, who, you know, so-so at this point. That's the thing is, Golden State is a game that no one would be surprised if San Antonio wins. No one would be surprised. Yeah. Because it's, then you have Dallas, who's playing really well, Denver, and Minnesota. So a lot of these games, to me, are coin flips. And that's scary, right? That's scary from either angle, whether you don't want them to make the playoffs, you want a better draft pick, or if you're a diehard Spurs fan that just wants to see them win. Like, it can really go either way.
Well, and so it's twofold here, right? Like, making the play-in ultimately is not the worst thing, because you're either A, going to lose the first game, and then you lost a few ping pong balls, probably like a 0.5% chance on getting the 1, 2, 3, or 4 in the lottery odds.
Sure.
That's not the end of the world. If you win that first play-in game, you're obviously losing another spot in the lottery, and then you're going to lose to the Wolves or the Clippers or whoever ends up waiting for you in that game. So I'm ultimately not nervous about them falling out of the lottery, but again, it's about amassing as many ping pong balls as you can. I'm glad that, or I'm hoping that by the time we get there, April 7th, that Minnesota is not locked into the 7 seed and maybe resting guys. That Golden State is not locked into the 3 seed on April 9th, the penultimate day of the season, and they're resting guys, and the Spurs fucking get a win there. And the same thing with Dallas, that they're not locked into the 4 or the 5 and they can't move or whatever. Like, that is what has me worried, because we have, the Spurs have 2 what should be guaranteed wins at home back-to-back against Portland. With the way the Lakers are playing right now, even with Anthony Davis slated to come back on Friday, and I do think LeBron makes it back on Friday.
Me too.
I just, like, how many more games are they going to win? Because that's a schedule we haven't really looked at yet, right? And, like, to compare and contrast that with San Antonio, because I think both of us agree, like, there's not a ton of need to look at the Pelicans schedule here. I think they are going to make it.
Yes.
Lakers obviously going to lose to Dallas tonight. Then they're at Utah on Thursday. Then home New Orleans, which is a huge game. If the Lakers have a chance, they have to win that game. Because I think it's an L coming tonight, obviously, an L coming on Thursday. Then you're against Denver on Sunday, at Phoenix, at Golden State, win against OKC, and then at Denver on the last day, which clearly Denver will be favored if they are playing their guys and still having something to play for. So I don't know, man. Like, it's, and if you're the Lakers, like, do you even want to make the play-in game? Do you, and like, maybe that's a stupid question, because I think, yes, obviously LeBron and Anthony Davis want to make the play-in game, mm-hmm. but like, dude, like, are they really, you're going to get embarrassed either losing to the Pelicans, losing to the Clippers and losing the Battle of LA then, or losing to the T-Wolves. And then you get fucking Memphis or Phoenix. They're going to sweep them. The Grizzlies might win that series in five without Ja Morant.
Correct.
So like, what's the point?
I was literally about to say, what's the point?
And that's what scares me as a Spurs fan, is that, like, there's a few factors there. First of all, the infamous San Antonio trade embargo on the Los Angeles teams, which is very much real. Popovich will not trade with the Lakers. Won't do it. That's why DeMar never had a shot to go there. I think, and I'm not the first person to say this, I've seen people mention it on different social media platforms, I don't think it's out of the question that Pop is looking at the fact that he can eliminate not just the Lakers, but LeBron as potentially his final act as head coach. I don't think he retires next year, but it's always a possibility with a guy of his age, his stature, et cetera.
Yeah.
If his swan song is knocking out the Lakers and LeBron from not just the playoffs, but the play-in game and sending them into obscurity for a few months, I think that's something he's interested in. And
I agree 100%.
And he can parlay that with, we have an extremely young core that is going to, or projected to be, the future of this team for years to come, and we want to get them experience, because for them, what's the difference? Like, which is more beneficial, having a 5.5% chance to get the one, the first overall pick, or a 4% chance and getting our young guys some experience and possibly winning some huge games? Yeah, like the other night when Keldon Johnson had that putback on the Warriors and they upset the Warriors, like, ultimately, that's not getting them to the goal that I want, which is more ping pong balls. But I wasn't super upset at the fact that one of our key guys going forward made a huge play in it against a team that has a championship pedigree. There are positives to whichever way this goes for the Spurs. It's just not the way I've wanted it to go. And because I've been so locked in on that for 6 months, it stings a little bit.
Correct. No, yeah. And that's fair. It's twofold. Like you said, like, I think there are benefits to both. Obviously, in the NBA, you rarely see the team with outside of the top two, maybe three ping pong balls to get the top pick. It just doesn't happen in the NBA. Mm-hmm. So I do actually think it'd be more worthwhile for them to make the plan. I'm not going to openly cheer for it against you, but I do. So I think, like you said, Pelicans locked in. The Lakers are, obviously, everyone listening probably in the morning, just lost to the Mavericks. Shout out Russell Westbrook for the one time I'll ever shout him out for his hitting is over. but they lose this game, and they are now my screen's glitching, but they lose this game, so they're now sitting in the 10 seed. They will now be tied with the Spurs. Same record, 31-44. Who has a tiebreaker? It has to be the Spurs, right?
Over the Lakers, it's the Spurs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as of
right now, the Spurs are in the play-in now.
Correct. Yes. So you look at the Lakers' remaining schedule, second toughest in the league. Suns, Mavericks, which is tonight, Jazz, Nuggets twice, Golden State. Then you have New Orleans, who, dear Lord, that's not, they couldn't beat them. They lost by like 25 in LA. And they have Oklahoma City. Who, the thing is, like, I'm not gonna put the Lakers past any team at this point. I don't, it's such a chalk take to say I don't think they're gonna make the play-in. I think they'll make the play-in.
You think the Lakers do?
I think they do.
I like your optimism.
Assuming they get LeBron and Anthony Davis back Friday, I think they do. Because to me, like, I don't know, LeBron's what, 38, whatever, 36, 38. Like, we've seen him will so many teams over the top And I'm not saying it seems to be willed over the top.
You're not wrong.
But if there's any player in the NBA, even today, that I would trust to will a team into a play when they are neck and neck, it's still LeBron James. It really is. It's not Kevin Durant. Yeah. It's not Giannis. It's LeBron James.
Yeah, no doubt.
So I do think they do, but if they don't win their first game with LeBron Anthony Davis, then I think they're dust.
That's how fragile it is for them right now.
Exactly. And we had both predicted them to be first in the West.
Mm.
It doesn't sting. It's like gratifying almost. Like, yeah, this is kind of nice. But holy cow, the discrepancy in expectations versus outcome is insane. And I found it while you were talking. I also found the Drew Holiday stat I was looking for. Over the last month in the fourth quarter, Drew Holiday leads the team in points in the fourth quarter and minutes, 8.5 points, 9.4 minutes per fourth quarter, 67.4% from the field, 70.6% from three, offensive rating of 134.7. Oh, that's boy. Insane. That is insane. He has to be the best fourth quarter player over the last month in the NBA. And he's doing it again tonight. Like, he just hit a massive three. Bucks up two with 12 seconds left, I'm sure. Everyone obviously knows what happens besides us right now.
Giannis got a 40-piece, and Tobias Harris started breathing again, 22, right. 11, and 6. Well, and this is – and if you look at this box score, and obviously people can do this in the morning after the game, this was – obviously we didn't get to watch. I'm sure you have it on a second screen over there. I do not. This was a playoff game. And I see the game is tied now.
Can we talk about how the hell TNT didn't flex the Lakers and Mavs off for the Sixers and Bucks?
I think it's I think it's time constraints because they want to keep that 2.5 hour difference. That is a misstep by the league, TNT, whoever can control. I can't imagine that it would be that tough to move the Philly Milwaukee game just back half an hour and flex it that way. But you don't even have to change the Dallas.
Even if they didn't have to move it, if their concern can't be views or ratings, because more people would tune in for Philly. Like, I get it's Luka, and at the time it was Luka LeBron, who's obviously not playing. But more people would tune in for Bucks Philly anyways, which looks like it's about to go to overtime.
This is, in regulation here, Giannis, 37 minutes, Middleton, 39, Drew, 40, Tobias, 36, Embiid, 39, Maxey, 40, Harden, 37. Like, this is a playoff game.
The only player off the bench for the Bucks that has at least 20 minutes is Grayson Allen with 25.
Mm-hmm. Playoff rotations.
I love it. It just gets me so riled up for the NBA playoffs. Mm-hmm. So before we head out, is there any big take or takeaway you want to provide before regarding the seeding or any hot take or bold prediction that you have on the top of your mind?
Well, you know, I love throwing out hot takes.
We know,
but I think
insert LaMelo, but you have to have something for Charlotte, right? but
I will say, and obviously this is behind closed doors, but at the FTN staff watch party last Friday, I furthered my case on why I think LaMelo will have. So maybe we can bring that conversation to the pod next week or during the off season or what have you.
We got the T-Panthers on the pod for the
Why not? I will leave with not a victory lap because it has not happened yet, but a pat on the back because it seems like it's going to. Paul George back tonight for the Clippers. Kawhi Leonard reportedly expected to be ready for round one. I hope if you listened in February when I said it, those guys are going to be back. Just sprinkle a little bit, half a unit, maybe quarter unit on Clippers to win the West. I assume you're getting
it's 20 to one. Like, that is insane.
And it was 40 to one 3 weeks ago.
Correct. It's 20. I always default to DraftKings Sportsbook, but if you use FTM Bets Prop Shop, you can find the best odds and do some shopping. So let's do it live. To win the West. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
35 to one on Caesars.
Yeah.
You got to sprinkle in.
Look, something. I don't have my own little icon on FTN bets. Maybe that will come next season. So I don't have a bet slip. But if you are a listener to this podcast, I've given out we'll call it 1.5 pretty good bets, because LeBron James leading the league in scoring, that's happening. That's absolutely happening. He needs to play in one more game to qualify. And guess what? Because Giannis has 40 tonight, he's going to move up a little bit. I don't know if he's going to pass LeBron, but that's just going to put more fuel on the fire for LeBron to go over whatever the fuck his points prop is the next game he plays. I guarantee you it's going to be too low unless you see it at like 38.5. So next time he plays, I see your face. What happened?
So with 1.6 seconds
Bucks left, win here.
With 1.6 seconds left, they called defensive goaltending on Giannis to tie the game. So Joel Embiid tied the game on a goaltending. They reviewed it and overturned the game over, not goaltending.
Wow. And this game is in Philly.
Oh, yeah. The thing is, you look at it, it was a very clean block. Okay. That's a game-winning block by who I added the best as a defensive player. Yes, and who I added 2 weeks ago to my bet slip as the defensive player of the year this season. So that furthers that case right now.
I'm going to go look up the clip, but like that is, without seeing it, just the way that you described it while also slobbering, that appears to be what would be the best way to phrase it? Like if you're going to make a campaign poster, right, or a campaign ad for Giannis's Defensive Player of the Year, it's most likely that block in the most important game to date in the regular season, in crunch time with 1 second left, blocking the guy who's above him on the MVP ladder to win the game.
How many players can make that play? One.
Well, I haven't seen it again, but just the way you're describing it, I'm trying to take a little bit off the top because I know you know. If I was describing a DeJounte game-winning play, I would put a little spice on it too.
I think, honestly, in full realism, I think LeBron is the only other one.
True.
KD's not doing that. KD's not at the rim in that possession.
But just going back to me again, patting myself on the back. What is it? -160 now for LeBron to finish as the
that was as of this morning. It'll probably shift a little bit with the Giannis game.
Well, you maybe missed the boat there if you haven't put a bet down on that yet, but I still think that's almost free money. Next game LeBron plays, bet the over on his points. I don't care who else is it. If Anthony Davis, I don't care. He's going for the scoring title because that's what he has left. This man is very much about his legacy, and that's what he's got this year. And he's also pushing towards the all-time scoring record. And then a little sprinkle on Clips to win the West. And that is my bet slip here.
I like it. And, you know, I added Giannis at +1,400 on FanDuel Sportsbook to win Defensive Player of the Year. He's still +1,400. Kind of confusing to me that he is behind Marcus Smart, who's the favorite to win Defensive Player of the Year right now. Then it's Bam, Mikal Bridges, Gobert, then Giannis. Am I missing something? Voter fatigue? Like I don't get it.
Yes. Yes. That is a very real thing. It sucks. And that's why, you know, half those people shouldn't have a vote.
God, that's annoying. Marcus fucking Smart? Are you serious?
He's been pretty
good. Okay, I know. But he's not even close to defender Giannis is. I don't think he's the defender Mikal Bridges is.
I agree.
Interesting. That's annoying. Well, that was fun.
Yeah.
And this next 3 weeks of the season is going to be a blast. Yeah. So we'll be back either this Thursday, next Tuesday. We will be back within the next week. We will have we'll have to put together another playoff watch party. I think, you know, as much fun as the Nets and Bucks one was, I think it'd be really fun to do a play-in game. Either the 8-9 or the 9-10, the 7-8.
If it's the Spurs, we're firing it up.
All right, we'll do it. We just got to find someone that is
We may be able to do some. Well, they're probably going to do East one night, West another night. But I was going to say if Cavs and Spurs played on the same night, that would be a nice little doubleheader. But yeah, and we'll play it by ear, and we'll have Whammy on the pod coming up. Who we won't say won the listener league, but he is the last remaining FTN subscriber. So he won the prizes, but Whammy and I in the final as we speak. So we'll have him on next week. We'll see how that turned out. We'll get Stefano off the couch again, as you said. Adam will be back from throwing footballs over the mountains. It's going to be a hell of a finish to the regular season.
It is. I'm looking forward to it. As always, for Joe, for Zach, this is the FTN NBA podcast. Enjoy these last few weeks of the regular season. We will be back in a couple days. Have a good day.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN NBA podcast with Adam, Joe, and Zach. Make sure to follow your hosts on Twitter at APPfeiffer24, at JMeds34, and at KowaisenbergDFS. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.